tuned in right now to a special Black Is 15-minute break. You have me, Casey Layman. Chris Layman is here, and we also have Amber Washington and John Wood on the line. And we're just trying to do a quick follow-up to Friday's live podcast on Spreecast and discuss briefly our reactions to President Obama's speech on Friday. So whoever wants to jump in first, by all means, go ahead.
Well, I thought that, this is John Wood, I thought that the president's remarks were reasonable. Now, I think he was trying to accomplish a couple of different things. One, I think he was sort of trying to calm the emotions a little bit with respect to the reaction on the verdict without taking, I'm under the flight path, without taking an exact stand on the verdict itself. I mean, you know, he sort of upheld the integrity of the case to the extent that he seemed to say that the process was legitimate. You know, you had a jury, you had the judge who he said was professional, and ultimately, you know, the presence of reasonable doubt makes the decision, you know, something that wasn't necessarily predictable, I suppose. But the important thing that he said, keep in mind, he's talking to everybody. He's not just talking to Black people. But I think explaining to people, you know, why it is the Black community is not just going to treat this like any other case, because we have a history and an experience with profiling, rather with being the victims of profiling, and with experiencing discrimination and suspicion and all these negative parts of our American experience, that's going to make us, you know, not be particularly passive when it comes to seeing something like this happen, when most of us feel that, you know, that this is an obvious case of one of our people, you know, coming to a terrible end as a result of being thought to be something that he wasn't, you know. And so I think that the president got that across in a way that was not divisive and that might help to make people a little less emotionally reactive on both sides, hopefully, and more inclined to pursue a productive conversation about it. So I thought that he struck the right tone for me.
This is Amber. I'll just say that I definitely agree in the part about the president acknowledging that, you know, frustrations in the Black community come from a longstanding history that does not go away in regards to feeling frustrated or unfair, you know, due to whatever injustice that's going on in the community. And how, you know, finding out, and the timing was so ironic because I just listened to a radio program in which the founder and CEO of my organization was speaking about the need for presidential leadership came up on the panel. So it was as if, you know, maybe someone in his office was listening and said, hey, you know, go say something for 20 minutes because it's, you know, past time. So I'm glad that he spoke his truth. I'm glad that he honored the experiences of so many African-American men and, you know, Black people on the whole during his remarks. And I appreciate the fact that he said, you know, organized governmental type of discussions on race, you know, don't necessarily have a big impact, that it's more, you know, in communities and churches, families and workplaces where people can examine themselves and maybe be a little more honest. And, you know, I think he said, you know, ring the bias. How am I ringing the bias out of myself when I interact with people and judge them on their character and not the color of their skin?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, this is Chris. I thought the same thing. I did, like Emerson, I did like the fact that he brought out, am I trying to judge people fairly and not just, you know, go by the things that, you know, I see are the stereotypes. I am happy that he spoke on, I'm trying to let that part of the country, that large group of Americans know that, you know, this is what Black people deal with, these certain instances with the door locking and crossing the street and clutching the purses. And, you know, for at least somebody of his position to admit that some of those things have happened before, I mean, I guess, you know, because we've had white men previously before, you know, none of them would ever go that far, really identify with somebody who is a victim. But, you know, he did try to make it as, try to get people to understand what was going on. And, yeah, like you said, why the racial tension and this anger that's been bubbling up for so long. I guess I understand why some people felt like he didn't go there enough. You know, I did read that Tavis Smiley was basically like, well, he was forced into say something. He really didn't want to say it. I thought he felt like it needed to be said, and I figured most of his people would not want him to say anything because it's a race topic and we want to avoid race. So I actually thought he was going out of his way, but maybe that's just me.
This is Kim. I thought the speech was necessary, and I'm glad he came out and said something, and like all of you have said before, I think the points that he hit on were important, and I'm glad more than anything that he spoke to his personal experiences as a black man and being perceived as a black man and what that is like on a day-to-day basis that, you know, other groups in the country may not experience. The point of his speech that stands out to me and will be something that I focus on in the months to come is the towards the end of the speech where he talked about wanting to create something to support black men in this country and black boys so that they feel included. I am really hoping that he stands by those words, and this is not something that is just said to kind of pacify the black community and get us to calm down, and then nothing happens. And I definitely think we should hold him accountable for those words because he didn't have to say that at all. He could have just gone through the whole motion of walking those people that cannot understand our outrage and frustration at this verdict, just walking them through our experience and attempting to put our response into context. But the fact that he did end it with that idea, I do think we as a community need to hold him accountable and you know, keep our eye on anything that comes from his office that talks about supporting and nurturing black men in this country.
Yeah, although I was careful to notice that right after he said that, he also said, I'm not saying that some new government program is necessarily
right.
The answer. And actually, I think he's right about that. I think that we do need to hold him accountable, but we also need to hold ourselves accountable too. And I think that's part of what he meant by that. There's so much that we as a community can do, you know, with cooperation with, you know, with the president himself as an individual and to whatever degree with the government. But there's so much we can do that we're not doing to make our young people feel included, make them feel as if they have a future, that they have opportunity, and that they're not destined to be the outcast of society, both within and without the black community, that you know, I feel like we're falling short on that as a people. And if I have any criticism about the, you know, the, I guess you could call it the Trayvon movement or the Justice Trayvon movement, it's not that people are angry about this that bothers me. It's just that it seems that people, that it takes an outsider killing one of our own for people to really get angry, as opposed to, I think, paying the amount of attention that we should be paying to the young black boys that get killed every single day, most often by other young black boys. You know,
the day Trayvon Martin was killed, there were seven others on Friday.
Yes.
And the thing about it is, even though President Obama, you know, it's not going to be enough for him to say we need to create support systems and that be a call to the entire black community to step up. That in and of itself is not going to do it. I don't expect him to come forth with any sort of new, you know, federal funded program. But the fact that he did say something about putting something together to support young black men, again, I'm going to redirect the focus onto him to see what it is he specifically plans to put into place. The one thing that we discussed in regards to folks bringing up black-on-black crime when it comes to the Trayvon Martin case, and we all seem to be on the same page with this, we definitely understand, one, that black-on-black crime is a huge issue in our community. There's no argument for that. But there's a couple of points that need to be considered. First of all, black-on-black crime is no greater than white-on-white crime. It's just our numbers, there's not as many of us as there are of white Americans. So the more of us that are lost, the more detrimental that is to the community overall. The second thing is, in a black-on-black crime situation, you don't have any black perpetrators walking away from the crime. So that does not have the same – to me, the argument is not the same. In this situation, we're talking about a young black boy who was killed and a man who killed him who is free. In a black-on-black crime situation, it is clear nobody's walking away from the situation free. And I'm not saying that that's not something that we should continue to be upset about or argue against, but the points are not the same. The outrage and the response is not the same because nobody is walking away from a black-on-black crime situation, period. And right now, George Zimmerman, wherever he is, he has his freedom, and Trayvon is buried. So that, to me, I'm sorry, John, I'm not really trying to, like, slice into your conversation, but that's the point that we went over on Friday, and it's one that we just don't feel, honestly, holds water in regards to this argument. It just doesn't. Like I said, we can't argue against the fact that black-on-black crime happens, but this is not the same sort of circumstances at all.
Well, it's not the same sort of circumstance, but I feel like our response is a bit disproportional. As you mentioned,
I don't think so. I think folks get upset when black on black crime happens, but there's no marching in the streets because
right.
You don't lost two black men in that situation. You've lost one who's lost his life, and the other one in some way is going to lose his life because he's either going to be in the system for the rest of his life or some other circumstances because he's now been labeled a murderer for the crime that he committed. So it's a double loss.
Yeah, but it seems as if there's not the same unity. Sorry, airplane. It seems like there's not the same unity of purpose in combating that as there is in combating the Zimmerman issue. And I understand what you're saying about it being somewhat of a systematic issue, in as much as you might say, well, the police respond differently given the racial circumstance with the Zimmerman-Martin situation, as opposed to you have a black person killing a black person, you know, both of them are going to wind up, you know, in the way we see the police responding to these things, both of them are going to wind up being victims in one way or another. But, you know, in terms of identifying what element is really the most damaging to our community, it's the element that I do not see us having the same sort of unified resolve to combat that we have in terms of combating the Zimmerman issue, you know, and that is black-on-black crime. We all acknowledge it's there, and we all feel bad about it, but you're right, there are no marches in the streets, and I'm not saying we make villains out of, you know, our young black men for coming from violent circumstances, but there needs to be a similar sort of dramatic, I think, pulling together on the part of the people of the community, because that's what's going to sink our people at the end of the day. It's not going to be George Zimmerman. It's not going to be events like that. These are things that make us angry, but they're not going to the heart of what's actually destroying our community. And what's actually destroying our community are the things that we are not marching the streets about. The things that are harder for us to confront, harder for us to find a unified and systematic way of confronting, you know? And so I think the response is a little out of proportion in that sense. I'm not negating, you know, the travesty and the tragedy that is this incident with Trayvon Martin, but I would love to see us marching in the streets in response to the truly pervasive set of ills that are festering in our community that it seems like we're having a very difficult time providing a unified front against. You know, that's really what I want to see, and that's what I'm not seeing. And I would love to see Barack Obama or anybody else take a greater role in leading us in that direction. But right now, I'm not seeing it.
No, because everybody's holding their breath for a leader. And I think the one point that we talked about as well is, like, we could all take to the streets on black-on-black crime, but then what would that do, ultimately? It seems like what needs to happen within black households in the cities versus, I mean, because even with the vigils and the protests that happened for Trayvon around the nation, they are a wonderful showing of support for his family. They're a wonderful showing of support for the people down in Sanford, Florida. but with no action behind that, it's not going to make a difference in regards to anything as far as legislation being changed, as the law being looked at. If we don't ourselves start making some changes in our behaviors when it comes to, like, a couple of things we talked about when it comes to voting, even when it's those middle of the term elections, going out and voting when it's not just something major, making sure that we participate in jury duty, being more conscientious about how we consume and trying to truly support black-owned businesses in our community that provide us with different goods and services, and not just the restaurants, but all of the various places, the cleaners, the shoe shops, whatever stores we have left, you know, actually putting some money toward them and giving them some support. You know, we need action. Marching in the street, marching on the freeway, it says something for the moment, but over a long term, it doesn't do anything. So it's almost like we need a greater action plan to see some other stuff happening. Amber, Chris, John, and I have pretty much dominated this conversation. Anything else you all want to say?
My comments, you know, just I didn't want to get too much into what you may have discussed on Friday, but, you know, the whole bringing, you know, making, comparing black-on-black crime to this instance is just a distraction from, for me, what is at the root of this, which is implicit bias and racism. And the fact, if we expect President Obama to come out, and he has spoken on, you know, some of the tragedies and killing in his hometown or adopted hometown of Chicago, but if he said more than the occasional, he would definitely be painted as this, you know, what some people said after this briefing, the racist in chief, and that he's biased and this black president is going out of his way to not be a president to all peoples. And I think that people in communities where black-on-black violence is an epidemic are definitely out in the streets. There's a campaign for black male achievement across this country. And like you said, it's going to start in the households, in the conversation, in the families and communities about what we're going to be doing to reinforce, you know, the positive self-image of black youth and what they have to contribute to their communities and the future of our people, you know, on the whole. I feel that, you know, him making a statement and acknowledging the history that doesn't go away is a nice way of saying, you know, America has been violent and racist towards people of color since its inception. Everybody, let's not forget that. And this is just a reality of what people are dealing with every day. So for him as a national, you know, leader of the free world, whatever, to be making those statements is like appropriate because racism touches and affects and comes out of everybody every single day. Now, you know, getting into the social ills of what, you know, causes for the crazy levels of black-on-black, you know, crime, like you said, proximity and the article that's floating around in regards to the myth on black-on-black crime, you know, that's all accurate as well. You know, in voting, we need to think about what policies are being in place in these places that lead to disenfranchisement, what institutional racialized politics have resulted in widespread unemployment and lack of opportunity and resources in these places. So to me, there's no, like you said, it's dead in the water. It's two separate things. A black man died, that's the commonality. But there's no other black man on the other side going to jail for life. Zimmerman's somewhere chilling for all we know.
Right. It does seem that, I mean, it is two. I mean, the point that he made in there where he said statistically somebody like Trayvon would be more likely to be shot by a peer than somebody else, I mean, that's pretty telling. And I think for black people, it's easier for us to galvanize around somebody that is out of our area. It's like,
yeah, that's right.
Easier to fix somebody else's house and, like, we're going to go over here and try to have him fix that. But when it's like we'd have to have some kind of town meeting because we'd be basically marching in our community on our community.
Right.
We're not going out to City Hall or someplace surrounding it like, hey, you need to listen to us. We're not leaving till you do. We'd have to do that, you know, basically in our community.
Yeah, and like I had the thought the other night when the whole situation went down in Leimert and it got a little out of hand when the young folks were out there, and I was like, this would be one of those opportunities, you know, if we had more black men just present in the community, because that march was predominantly kids, a bunch of young folks. If we had more black men predominant in our community, they could be out there rallying those kids, organizing those kids, keeping things from getting chaotic. But that didn't happen. There really weren't any, quote-unquote, grown-ups there to help monitor those young people and kind of steer them in a better direction. And then the situation got chaotic in terms of, you know, some vandalism happening in some of the stores. You know, and that, to me, was just a showcase of a bunch of young folks who are misdirected because they weren't out there in support of Trayvon. They were just taking advantage of a situation. There was already a vigil happening, and they just got out in the streets and got wild. But it speaks to, it speaks to the lack of cohesiveness in the community. There aren't a whole lot of black families. There aren't a ton of black men, like, standing tall around the community in areas out here to support young men, to be mentors to young men. You just got young men hanging with young men, and they all have the same mindset, you know. And so there's no mentorship. There's no guidance. There's or not enough of it. I don't want to say no, but there's just not enough of it. And only one person is able to able to help so many children. So I wish we just had a larger presence of brothers in the community. So
yeah,
I don't know where it's going to start or how it's going to start. You know, we did have one person mention the idea that, you know, the mothers, since we're not looking at fathers coming into the place, that we need to get the mothers together, and we need to rally around our sons and our boys. You know, but anybody who has that conversation usually comes back to the fact that when it comes to a young man, there's nothing like the hand of the father available for that young man. So I don't know. I appeal to all the fathers out there to make sure you're developing relationships with your boys and maintaining those relationships and having a presence in their lives, because it's clear without that, it puts us in a pretty detrimental position. You know, we don't have the strongest foundation that we need.
No, that's right. But to what you said a minute ago, you're absolutely right. Marches are not sufficient to change anything. But you hit on the problem. We're lacking the familial foundation and the communal foundation that is both what we would need to make, in pretty much all areas, to make the lasting changes that we want to see made, and it is in and of itself part of the change that has to be made, that we have to establish that foundation in the first place. I actually, Chris, you hit on the difficulty, you know, that require, you know, if we do demonstrate on these issues, black and black violence, it requires us marching in our own communities. But I don't see that there's anything wrong with that. It's not sufficient, but it's a good thing to do, I think, to stir the forces of the community and to show people within the community that the heart of the community, the heart of the black family, is not going to sit still and accept the status quo of violence anymore. Now, there obviously needs to be a plan that comes after that, but that action statement is in and of itself important because it gives people, I think, the avenue to see people standing up for this and to believe that there really are significant forces in the community who are ready to act on behalf of change. But we have to be able to make that action statement, you know. And, marching is an effective way to do it. There just needs to be a plan that comes after that. And putting that together, I mean, that falls to each and every one of us, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, to put that together and make that happen. So, you know, I hope each of us and everybody listening is, you know, ready to participate in that when the time comes, because, I mean, I'm looking at my watch and I see the time coming. So, you know. But anyway, that's my two cents.
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Amber?
I mean, I think that was an excellent way to close. We all just need to look at our watches and check ourselves. The time is here, and what are we going to do?
Yeah,
basically. I mean, we can't wait any longer. Things aren't going to change until we decide to make the change for ourselves. And once it, you know, collectively comes together, I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, same here. Well, I thank you all for giving of your time for this 15-minute break. And as always, stay tuned for the next one. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.